Hello and welcome to my second diary entry. It is July 7th, 2021, and today I'm feeling good as well as my first entry. I went to school today. I went in person. We had the editing class where we used cameras. It was really cool, and I'm definitely learning a lot. It was nice to be out of the house and to see other faces, even though we were still wearing a mask, and just kind of get to start having a sense of normalcy every week, like a routine in some way that doesn't just revolve around me sitting, you know, on my desk and then sitting on my bed and then sitting on my desk and then sitting on my bed. So I'm really excited about that. The weather is also kind of strange. It's like half rainy, half sunny. I feel like it's been like that for like a couple weeks now. But whenever it is sunny, I feel so good because I get to go for walks and it just really changes my mood. The world is honestly, I feel like, doing well considering how it's been recently. The Habs are doing good in hockey. In England, they're opening up soon in the coming weeks. They're opening completely, like after COVID, no restrictions. There's still like lots of anxiety, I think, but today there was actually an announcement that Ontario, I believe, had no COVID deaths for 24 hours, which is, I think, the first time like ever in years, probably, or at least over a year and a half, which is super great, super exciting. So definitely feeling positive. But my the person I'm going to be kind of talking about today that I really wanted to reflect on is somebody I learned about from a podcast called Stuff You Should Know. And the episode is called The Sad Story of William James Sidis. And it was a really great podcast. I learned so much and I felt like it really resonated with me because, you know, we've been living in a world where we're isolated, not by choice. We're forced to be, you know, separating, not so much anymore, but for a while we were forced to be separated, like by people from a distance, you know, whether that's in lineups, a social distancing, whether that's, you know, being stuck at home, not seeing your family, not seeing your friends, whatever the case may be. But it's definitely kind of forced upon us because of safety. And because of that, it's so difficult, right? Like, it's like draining, it's exhausting, sad, lonely, all of those things. And I kind of, through the story, realized that, you know, what if it was by choice? Like, what would make someone kind of want to isolate by choice? Like, what would have to happen for that to happen? Does that make sense? And this kind of podcast talks about somebody, so the person that they're talking about, his name is William James Sidis. So William was one of those people who basically chose to isolate himself on purpose. And I found that so interesting. And it also kind of connects, the story kind of connects to other things happening today in this day and age. So I will jump into the story and reflect as I jump in. So William James Sidis was born April 1st, 1898 in New York City. His parents were Jewish immigrants from the Ukraine. His father was named Boris, and he was a psychologist, super, super smart, with a PhD and an MD. And his mother was also extremely smart. Her name was Sarah, just like mine. And she also had an MD. I think she was one of the first women to attend Boston University, but she graduated from the School of Medicine in 1897. So they were both incredibly intelligent people who believed that they could actually teach their child by the way that they raised them, using certain, you know, ways of talking to their child, certain techniques, etc., to be like a genius. Like, they thought that this was something that people could just do. Like, it's just everybody around you is being kind of lazy or not raising the children in the right way, and that they could sort of, through their techniques, create a genius child. And, you know, by doing, like, they would have to expose them to a world of knowledge, you know, from a very young age and all those kinds of things. And interestingly enough, they did actually do that. I don't know if that was a weird coincidence that their child was extremely genius or that they really did have a big role in that. Probably a mix of both, but they were described to be very pushy kind of parents with this idea. And, you know, their parenting methods were definitely criticized a lot by people around them and the media and things like that. But yes, it did work in this case. So they gave their son, Boris Sidis, had an IQ that was estimated to be 50 to 100 points higher than Albert Einstein and was estimated to be, you know, in the 250-300 range. So I'm not going to lie, I am not an IQ expert. I don't know the details of how smart that really is. But from what I heard in the podcast and even just some extra research that I did, it's really abnormally high, like insanely high, probably one of the highest in the world ever, to be honest. So it's really crazy. You know, he could read the New York Times when he was 2 years old. When he was six, he could speak English, Latin, French, German, Russian, Hebrew, Turkish, Armenian. And he invented his own language too, called Vendergood. And he like wrote a whole book about it. At age 11, he entered Harvard. He wanted to go at age 9, but they said they wanted him to wait at age 11. He was, you know, ready at age 9 though. And he entered Harvard and he was one of the youngest students ever at Harvard. While he was a student at Harvard, like in 1910, I believe, he actually lectured the Harvard Mathematical Club, and he talked about four-dimensional bodies, which is like 4D world, I believe, and it's extremely complex. And pretty much most people in the lecture did not know what he was talking about because it was so complicated. But the people that did understand it were shocked and amazed, and it was like a revelation to them. It was just an incredible lecture. So he really was a smart person, not just, you know, book smart, but smart in the sense that he could rationalize and come up with different theories and ideas and put them together and really and explain them in a way, such a way that kind of brings about new ideas. You know, he wasn't just memorizing things. But yeah, so his experience there at Harvard was not good though. He was obviously much younger than all the other students. He graduated cum laude 5 years later, but he was bullied by his fellow classmates and hounded by the press. So his classmates apparently would tease him and chase him and do all kinds of things. He was hounded by the press. Like, they would show up and kind of grab him, take photos of him, ask him 500 million questions. You know, I don't know where his parents were. Clearly they were not in sight, and or they just didn't really care about that. And he was just, you know, totally harassed by all these people because of his intelligence, whether that was people were fascinated by him, or people were annoyed that he was there, or, like, you know, whatever the case was. It was definitely, he was taken advantage of. And he also, his parents, from what it sounds like, didn't really prioritize any other thing except for, you know, learning, like, really intensely. Like, he didn't get to socialize with other kids. He didn't really play. He didn't do anything like that. He was just, you know, strictly, like, school work, you know, skill, like, you know, making his, trying to educate himself as much as possible. So, because of all of this, which is very understandable, he was pretty, like, traumatized from a young age, and he became a recluse. Like, so once he graduated, he actually had a brief stint as a math professor. And then after that, he ended up taking on, like, a series of, like, odd jobs, like menial jobs, you know. He did low-level accounting work and things that a lot of people wouldn't highly regard. Like, his parents probably wouldn't. The people around him who he was surrounded with, you know, at Harvard and all these academics and things, like, definitely would never kind of take on jobs like that because they would have other opportunities or other passions that they would pursue. And he definitely could have, but he decided not to. He wanted to avoid the public at all costs, avoid the press, avoid the media. And he even said, like, there was a quote that he said that he wanted a perfect life, and his version of a perfect life was what he described as living in seclusion. So pretty much just being by himself, alone, not talking to anybody. And he even, you know, decided at a young age to remain celibate as well. So no romantic relationships or anything like that. And that's just so interesting to me because obviously it makes sense, you know, like, he was harassed by pretty much everyone in his life, including his parents, he was taken advantage of. And that definitely, I'm sure, gave him some sort of social anxiety or something like that. And he just didn't want to deal with it. And so he also was a very intelligent person who wrote tons and tons of books. He apparently, during his time, like working in all these jobs, he wrote dozens of books. And one was actually really important. And it had a theory that in there that would later become known as the black hole theory, which was discussed, you know, by, I think, Stephen Hawking and all kinds of extremely smart people way later on. So he was very advanced. And obviously, as a person like that, you know, you want to spend time doing research and writing books, and you want to be alone, I'm guessing, for a lot of those things. But I don't even think it was just that. Like, when I'm comparing it to today, like, I'm thinking of, first of all, my own experience, but also just about other kids who are growing up in this world. Like, imagine having pretty much two years, like school years, of your life being taken away from you, and so, like, social life being taken away from you, whether you're 2 years old to turning 4 years old now, or even 9 to like 12, or whatever that it looks like, even teenagers as well, even me, you really changed during those times. Like, you're so used to being alone, to not having big crowds around you, to not having, you know, having to have conversations with people, whether that's deep conversations or just everyday conversations. You might start to feel comfortable in your routine by being isolated and alone. You start to feel, you know, just like, it's just, you, it's kind of like a habit. Your brain gets used to it. And then obviously when things open up, it's kind of freaky. And like, that's how I feel. Like, when I sometimes I'm in a situation with a bigger group of people, or I'm just walking in the streets with more people around me, like, I get anxiety and I don't want to be there. Or if I have a social event, you know, a couple social events in, you know, a week or two, my batteries run dry and I'm like, okay, nope, time for my alone time again. And, you know, I want to stay in my room by myself for like the whole rest of the week or whatever. And that's not my personality at all. I have never been that kind of person. I've always been very go, 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 always want to be around people, socialize, and all those things. And so I'm thinking, like, just, I'm sure there was a certain, not only was he harassed by people, which was, you know, he wanted to and avoid the media by being isolated, but he also, I think, kind of may probably developed this sort of maybe anxiety, or like some sort of fear, or like, I don't know. I think he found sort of peace being alone. He could maybe really be himself, or he kind of got used to it, or the big years of his life that he was maybe developing mentally, he kind of like clung to that. But yeah, that's just my analysis. And I find it so interesting because, you know, he chose to this lifestyle. And he didn't only live in seclusion. Like, he did make some friends, like, and his friends really loved him. They thought he was the greatest guy ever. You know, when he was just doing his own thing, and he would change, he would move from city to city, he would change his name because he didn't want to be discovered. But yeah, he was definitely seen as, I guess, unsuccessful in people's eyes, because he was such an incredible prodigy. He was so smart by such a young age. He had all this potential in people's eyes and all these opportunities. He went to Harvard, etc. And he, you know, took on these little jobs, and he didn't want to really succeed, or he didn't want to be reveling in it. Even and so in people's minds, he was a failure. He was, you know, just because he wasn't sort of parading for them as this genius, or excelling in what they believed would be success. And he lived successfully out of the limelight until 1937. So pretty much, like, he actually was able to run away from the media and even his parents, from what it sounds like, to kind of live the life he would have preferred. And, you know, and when it was 1937, the New Yorker magazine actually sent somebody to report on him, sort of like one of those Where Are They Now articles. So it was a Where Are They Now article about this prodigy that, you know, fell off the planet type of thing. And they sent a female reporter to become his friend and gather information about him for an article. And it's really sad because he was definitely very affected by this and negatively. He clearly trusted this person, this woman who became his friend, and felt betrayed. And also he argued in court, actually, that the magazine had libeled him, and he did win the case. So, you know, it was a very big deal for him, to go out of his way to go to the courts, because for him, he would rather live in seclusion. And he kind of just put himself out there even more to stop, put an end almost to the narrative that was put out from him. And the narrative in the New Yorker article was not very nice. You know, it was kind of like he thought it made him seem a little crazy, made him seem a little weird. And he was just not about it anymore, because he had so much hate his whole life in the media when he was younger, especially, that he was just traumatized. He didn't want to have this anymore. And yeah, shortly afterward, actually, so in 1944, he died from a brain hemorrhage, and he was just 46 years old. So he was pretty young. And I think his dad also died from a brain hemorrhage, which is interesting, like the connection. But yeah, so pretty much, that's the story. That's it. And it's just really interesting to see how people in history who sometimes they go through hard times, their way of getting out with it or dealing with it is really different. It really varies. Some people take their trauma and they become, you know, the most famous blank blank in all of town, or write the most famous book, or want everyone to know every detail about their horrible experiences in order to prevent it. Or some people just want to be alone, be left alone and be in seclusion. And I'm sure William would have been definitely a comfortable living through this quarantine lifestyle. And yeah, so it's kind of my analysis of the day. It's just, what if isolation, like what do people do, or what kind of people, really enjoy isolation and want to choose it themselves as opposed to being forced? So thank you for listening. Bye.